I'm Sam Edwards. I'm third generation cure master from S. Wallace Edwards & Sons in Surrey, Virginia. We support the Heritage Radio Network because we believe in the cause and what they're doing. They're supporting family-raised livestock, small family farms, certified humane, pasture-raised, antibiotic-free. Basically, we take the products from Heritage Foods USA and make them into Serrano-style hams, prosciutto-style hams, bacon, sausage, like my grandfather did. You can find us at SurreyFarms.com or VirginiaTraditions.com.
Boys, I'm mellow as a honeydew. Yeah, that cat is high. Look at that look in his eye. Oh man, he's high. Yes, higher than a kite.
Welcome again to The Speakeasy. I'm your host, Damon Bolte. You're listening to the Heritage Radio Network. And today, my guest is Ian Wolf, writer, cocktail enthusiast, wine enthusiast, and an old friend of mine. Welcome to the show, Ian.
Thank you. Good to see you.
You recently have been doing some food writing and specifically cocktail spirits and wine writing for the Italian publication La Cucina Italiana, and I have some copies here with me. So this magazine obviously mainly focuses on Italian cuisine, mm-hmm. and spirits and yep. wine and culture, and it's a really fascinating magazine. It's available obviously in English. It's
yes, we are the U.S. edition of right. The Italian,
and like most food magazines, you also we were talking earlier about this. There are certain other things that float outside of the actual food and beverage part. Like there was one issue where you covered like vintage meat slicers, because obviously,
yeah, we did the Burkle, sure.
which uh-huh. is an amazing machine. We were talking also about how recently we were talking about how the food and beverage style of Italy was kind of born out of peasantry. You've got like cured meats, you've right. got pastas, mm-hmm. you've got even cheeses, you've mm-hmm. got wines that are stored. You know. And nowadays, it tends to be more of a sought after culinary style.
Absolutely, yeah.
And it's kind of like the upper echelon of culinary styles.
Well, it spans the full spectrum. I mean, you go to, like, for instance, Eataly, which just opened over off Madison Park, and you'll see a full range of everything from high gourmet to, you know, cucina povera. So you definitely get the full spectrum.
Now, before you were a food and beverage, and like nowadays when you work with La Cucina Italiana, you mainly do like spirits and wine.
Yeah, and I'm at this point I'm the food and wine editor, so I do more editorial side work. I will do some feature writing, mm-hmm. but I lean more towards the editorial side.
Cool. And before you did this, you worked as a chef.
Yep, indeed.
That started out in Seattle after you got out of college, correct?
Yep. I started up at a jazz club in Seattle, working the line, earning my chops, and then headed off to, wound up in New Orleans at a great restaurant there, worked there for a while, and then, moved on to San Francisco, opened a restaurant there.
The Blue Plate.
The Blue Plate, indeed. I had a great time there for about 2 years, and moved out to New York shortly thereafter.
Now, the cool thing, like, anytime I talk to someone from San Francisco, they always recommend the Blue Plate, and I'm like, oh, my God, I know that guy. tell us a little bit about how that was started.
It was very grassroots. Basically, three high school friends and one of their roommates from college all just decided to open a restaurant. You know, none of us were happy with what we were doing. We were working for other people, and we thought we had a good idea, and got some family and friends together to help chip in and roll up our sleeves and got the place open.
Sick of working for the man.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. Now, you started out, specifically your wine selection was all pretty much all domestic.
Yeah.
In the beginning. And then as time went on, you changed it into...
Yeah, I was raised in Northern California. So I figured, well, there's all this wine right here. Why would I feature wine from other places? Until a good friend of mine who was a sales rep for more of the wine importers I used started turning me on to Italian and French and Spanish wine. And from then it was, you know, the rest is history.
Cool. After that kind of experience, you moved from San Francisco. Wait a minute. Okay, let's back up a second.
Yeah, let's back
up. You once told me that you, first of all, you spent a little bit of time in Portugal.
Yeah.
Between Seattle and New Orleans.
Yeah, I spent 2 months in Porto, sampled my fair share of port wine.
Nice.
That was a nice visit. I kind of hoped to stay a little longer, but didn't really get any traction there. I was young. I had no work experience really at that point. So from there I came back to the States, took the train across the country, stopped off in New Orleans, and that's how I wound up in New Orleans.
Now, okay, you went to school originally in Seattle for literature,
correct? Yeah, I was just south of Seattle in Olympia.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
Where did the food come into play? Where did cooking come into play?
Well, food is definitely part of my family. My dad was really into it. His dad was really into restaurants and finding hidden out-of-the-way spots. So it was definitely part of my family. I guess just at one point I got out of college and didn't really know what I was doing, as most people don't when they get out of college, and
right.
Really wanted to be a writer. That was my my first passion. But cooking seemed like a great way to sort of get a job and still keep enough time for my own other creative pursuits or what have you. And I finagled my way into a kitchen and it stuck. So
yeah, it seems like the connection between the artist and the food service industry,
yeah,
/ bar industry,
yeah,
it's almost always present.
Yeah, like I mean, in the good spots you can feel it. You can tell, yeah, that something's gelling when somebody hits their stride, whether it's cocktails or food or,
yeah,
restaurants or, you know,
it's creativity all around.
Yeah, yeah.
And in a way, a social experiment, which is...
yeah, it should always be an experiment if it's going to be good.
Well, nothing wrong with experimenting,
yeah,
I guess.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's funny. I was just thinking about that. I had, like, some flashbacks of...
speaking of experimenting.
Yeah, exactly. My mom's going to love that reference. just the silliness of, like, the college, like, dorm room... The cuisine available, mostly like ramen noodles.
What do you mean burritos, man?
And burritos, yeah. It's kind of funny to find inspiration coming out of school, out of college, and creating with. I mean, it's almost like a boot camp for like culinary or like mixological.
I guess. Kind of, yeah.
Aspects.
I mean, that's a good point. You sort of.
It's like deal with what you have, you know?
Yeah,
like,
test the waters and see what fires you up.
Sriracha on everything.
And then from there, you go to foie gras, and then, exactly, you know.
Exactly. It's a natural transition, yeah, from sriracha on French fries to foie gras.
How about sriracha on foie gras?
Hey, man, I'll do it. Now I'm hungry. Let's get back onto the drink side of things. Upon your arrival in New York City, you worked at a few retail establishments, wine shops, spirits stores,
yep,
and really kind of like started learning a lot more about the spirit side, yeah, as well as more about the wine side of that. And obviously, if you're, you know, in New York City, you're learning a lot more about cocktails and wine, mm-hmm, and bars in general, and restaurants, everything, the whole gamut. Was there anything in particular that was inspiring to you? Like, I mean, it's going to be kind of like a geeky thing to say, but you are a writer.
Yeah.
So, yeah, like, a lot of times you make this connection with writers and drinking.
They do go hand in hand.
They do. Although, like, if you've ever seen my penmanship normal, like, yeah, when I'm sober,
that's what typewriters are for.
That's exactly right. Bang it out.
Yeah.
Was there anything in particular that was inspiring for you to start writing about food and spirits? When at any given point in...
Well, I guess, I mean, it's more just the fascination with the world of it. And the one good thing about La Cucina Italiana is I get access to, you know, the wide world of Italian wine and spirits. And it alone, like, the world of Italian wine and spirits alone is a lifetime.
Yeah.
You know, and I have the good fortune of being able to really focus on what's in front of me and not be responsible for balancing too much as I sort of look at, you know, what's out there and what's available. But, yeah, you know, I don't know what actually tipped the scales. I think I just kind of acquired a good amount of knowledge just working retail and being around it and going to shows and tastings and all that. And, I mean, I have a writing background and it just seemed like a good marriage.
Eventually they connected.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Also, I mean, it had to have been partially due to, of course, the passion and the reason why you got into the first place. I mean, like, those two passions, they probably felt separate at some point, like, for a long time, didn't they?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then at some point, it just clicked and made sense.
Yeah.
And it took a while for it to make sense, but it
feel a little less schizophrenic.
Right. We are going to take a break real quick. My guest today is Ian Wolf, food and wine and spirits writer for La Cucina Italiana. We'll be right back. All right.
Bye-bye. Cool. Thanks.
Service announcement from Heritage Radio Network. Tune in to Hot Grease every Monday at 3:30 p.m. Hot Grease strives to bring sustainability, localized sourcing, and other forward-thinking schools of culinary thought to the minds and kitchens of everyday folk. Each week, Nicole Taylor's conversations cover the entire spectrum of food enthusiasts, from internationally renowned culinary masters to moms on a budget looking to impress their tiniest critics. Again, that's every Monday at 3:30 p.m., Hot Grease on the Heritage Radio Network.
You're listening to The Speakeasy on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Damon Bolte. My guest today is Ian Wolf, wine and spirits editor at La Cucina Italiana magazine. We've been talking about his transition from cook to retail to writer.
I didn't want to interrupt.
No, you should.
Okay.
Okay. One of the first pieces that I saw that you worked on for La Cucina Italiana, you worked on a piece. We're gonna start moving into spirits and wine, but one of the first things I saw was chestnuts. It was a piece on chestnuts, correct?
I did some research. Yeah. On that piece. Yeah. Yeah, and I did some editing on it. That was a good introduction to an aspect of specific in cuisine that I hadn't really delved into. You know, I usually think of chestnuts as those, you know, right, chestnuts on like 6th
roasted,
Avenue and
roasting on an
Christmas.
Open fire. Yeah. Yeah, totally.
But it was a fascinating eye-opener for how extensive that ingredient is.
And a great pairing for wines. and Italian spirits, aperitifs and digestifs in particular. Another one was a piece we worked on together, based on Fernet Branca.
Yep.
Cocktails, which.
Where you showed your creativity. That was an amazing cocktail, and it was a fun project for sure.
Thank you. I was glad to be a part of it.
Yeah.
Fernet Branca tends to come up a lot on this show.
Go figure.
They should sponsor us.
Yeah, there
wink,
you go.
Wink, wink. But you've done, since then, you've done some pieces on grappa, holiday cocktails, which you worked with Tom Chadwick and...
Anna Bedoyan.
Mm-hmm.
That was a really, I mean, not to get off tangent here, but collaborating has been one of the funnest, aspects of the position that I've found myself in at La Cucina Italiana. Cause I get the chance to work with mixologists as much as I'd like to consider myself able to like whip up a cocktail at the drop of a hat. You know, it's not my expertise. And so, but it's been great to be able to work with people and bring in some cool ingredients.
The Dark Rider. Remember that one?
Oh yeah. How could I forget?
No, I think that's really great. Like, especially what you just said, collaboration is one of the things obviously in this industry that can really kind of make the experience to me, like getting to work with really great people, like just having this radio show, getting to talk with people, like-minded people that are just as enthusiastic as I am about it, and getting to create together. I mean, like we were going back to what we were saying earlier about like the artistry involved with the service industry on many levels, you know, behind the bar, in the kitchen, just the art of talking to people on a daily basis and not losing your mind.
Yeah, that's an art form.
That's an art form all of itself.
Yeah.
But yeah, like the collaboration you guys did together, Tom Chadwick, he's a buddy of mine. He has a great bar called Dram in Williamsburg. And there were some really amazing looking cocktails in that spread. And it was laid out very well. And I was actually looking at it a little while ago, and
we have the good fortune to have a great team. I mean, we're kind of a lean force over there, but I think we're doing some pretty interesting stuff, and it's coming out really well.
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, a lot of people don't know this, but my background is actually from like graphic design and printing, magazine stuff like that. And like looking at this magazine, which I'm holding in my hand right now, The layout of it is amazing. It might be one of the better laid out magazines that I've seen. The photography is amazing. At times minimalist, which is what I prefer. Mm-hmm. But like all the content is always extremely interesting. Like we were talking about earlier, like a spread on Burkle slicers.
Right, right.
It's like no one knows what a Burkle slicer is, but it's one of the most beautiful machines.
Right, right. Yeah.
Hand cranked.
Yep. Yep. You know.
Just here, there's a spread on decanters, you know.
It's, uh-huh. It's yeah, really, I mean, that's what I'm saying. We have the good fortune to really be able to focus our attention on what we're doing. And
Do you find that? I mean, we were talking earlier about like the collaboration with different like mixologists and chefs and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
These different people. Do you find that in certain ways that can be a, what am I trying to say? I guess, personally, like, I find, like, every time I collaborate with someone, I get reinvigorated, and I find that these different collaborations, that they'll steer you in these different directions, and you end up doing some things that you never thought were possible for yourself to actually accomplish. Like, for instance, you know, like you guys, like your collaboration with Tom Chadwick turned into this holiday thing,
and Anna,
and Anna, uh-huh. of course, I guess what I'm trying to say is, do you in any way think that, like, we didn't talk about this before, but it's been on my mind. Do you think in any way that you may one of these days write... you have two books published already.
Well, self-published, I should add.
But they published nonetheless.
But hey, they're out there.
Do you ever think that you might roll this into a... these books, the two books are... I have the first one. The first one is Of Military Maneuvers and Tree-Lined Streets, Stories for Wartime. And the second one is Certain Considerations, both by Ian Wolfe.
Well, yeah, I mean, both of those, in some degree, were collaborations, at least aesthetically.
Right, because you used, I can't remember.
The first one is a friend of mine, Aaron Thurlow, did the drawings on the cover and throughout the book. He also did the photography on the cover of Certain Considerations. And my girlfriend did the sort of text design for the cover of Certain Considerations. So, you know, I like to work with people on, you know, as many levels as I can.
Cool. I mean, and it's obviously you turned out well. I guess what I'm trying to get at is, do you think that you would ever write, because I would really like to read this. I love the Tree-Lined Streets book. And I've read it a couple times now, and
well, I appreciate that.
You're one
of a few select crowd.
You know, you read books like Alcoholic Esoterica and like Everyday Drinking, right, by Kingsley Amis.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, every time I get together with you, and we just basically like indulge. I just dropped my book. Indulge ourselves in general revelry,
right?
It's one of my favorite bar experiences, and to have someone
flattered.
You, well, thank you. Would you ever think of writing a book in that kind of style, like actually meshing the two?
Yeah, I mean, I should. It sounds like a great idea.
Did I just give you that?
We just collaborated.
We just collaborated
exactly. Right on the air.
That's amazing. Cool. Okay, let's get back on track. This is the problem with to let my listeners
the general know, nature of the show.
The general nature of the show is sitting around drinking and talking about drinking with good friends, which makes it really great.
Yeah.
But it tends to turn into a situation where we forget we're on the air.
Yeah.
And it's just a conversational thing, which I think is really great. And I love it about this show. To get back on track, you did do a spread on Grappa,
mm-hmm,
for La Cucina Italiana.
Yeah.
You did, like, what, 20 or so?
Oh, man, you had to ask specifics.
I've got the magazine
right
here.
But we did. I did 12, was it? Maybe it was 15. I did aged, unaged, and sort of slightly aged grappa.
Looks like 16 here.
Okay. Yeah, that was an amazing, because at that point I knew I liked grappa. I'd had it, you know, at restaurants and whatnot, and basically knew of only about 3 or 4 brands, and started researching for the story and realized there was an entire world of out there, you know, of distilleries and you know, small production distillers and stuff that was trying to get import licenses for, and it was, you know, mm-hmm, and what was most amazing about it was how nuanced this, you know, spirit is. I mean, in a lot of ways it's like tequila, in that it's a very rich, very full-bodied distillate, but it has a lot of different aspects to it that I think most people don't, or a lot of people just don't really consider. I mean, it has a bad reputation. It's fire water to a lot of people. Say,
it is the pure, it's the eau de vie, it's the pure essence of the grape,
the pomace, yeah, the leftover pomace from the winemaking process. So it's economical in a lot of ways because you've got this waste.
Just like that goes full circle to what we were talking about before. As a like, it's almost like a peasant thing, but it's a refined peasant's
spirit. I mean, its history comes from basically the barons and landed gentry tossing the leftover grape pressings to all the people who are basically making the wine and saying, here, do whatever you can. A lot of times they would just sort of re-ferment it and make like a light kind of wine from it.
Mm-hmm.
And then some people caught on that you could actually make something a lot stronger from it. And so what you're seeing now is you're seeing very vineyard-specific grappa that are actually, and here's one case in point, single vineyard grappa that definitely, I mean, you can taste the difference. I mean, you get vodka, you get grappa from Barolo, you get grappa from Barbaresco. This is agave di Gavi, so it's a little bit sweeter, but I think you'll probably agree that it's pretty remarkably smooth.
This is the Gavi di Gavi, right?
Mm-hmm.
You just said this one actually is like super chocolatey on the nose.
Yeah.
Wow, I haven't had this one yet. That's surprising to me because I really love grappa.
This is as I was saying, this is one of the a very small production grappa. I met the producer. He came into our offices. Really nice guy. Obvious passion for what he's doing. He hasn't been doing it. He's been doing it, I think, since the 70s. But, I mean, as far as I can say, he just nailed it.
Wow, this is one of... this. You're right. This is the best grappa.
And if you ever see, it's a Lorenzo Inga. You won't see it around too much, but it is out there. I think there might actually be some here.
At Roberta's?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Did I see a bottle? No, I didn't see a bottle of this. Sorry.
You saw the one that you
good,
brought.
They had a good selection, though, I have to say.
Oh, my God. Jack, you got to try this. We'll pour one for Jack.
Yeah, there's enough to go
after
around
the show. Wow, this is amazing. Okay, sorry to make everyone jealous out there. For not being able to try this with us, but I really appreciate you bringing this on the show.
Oh, glad to.
And I really appreciate you coming on the show, Ian. It's been a really great experience talking to you about La Cucina Italiana out on newsstands. Anytime you want to come back, man, let's do it.
I got lots to talk about.
I know you do. I know you do. And we could just keep on
just
going.
Keep on keeping on.
Thanks a lot, Ian.
Thank you.
And thanks for being on the show. And thanks to my producer, Jack, who is about to have a glass of grappa. I'm Damon Bolte. You've been listening to The Speakeasy on the Heritage Radio Network. Join me next week, where my guest will be Brad Farron of the Clover Club in Brooklyn, New York. Cheers. That cat is high. Look at that look in his eye. Man, I wouldn't lie. The cat's higher than a kite. Now when you see him. Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening. Man, I wouldn't lie. The cat's high.